Here, the old gods are dead.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here, the old gods aren't dead.
This is the Creepy Wee Podcast. I'm Rebecca, and this week I'm not actually with Liam. If you tuned into the last episode, you would have kent that Liam's taking a wee sabbatical for his exams. So for the next two episodes, I'm going to have guests on, and today I'm with an artist, my friend. He's called Gambo.
What's up?
So me and Gambo go way, way back, like primary school back, and I kind of say this on like every single episode of the podcast, that like such and such was my creepy awakening story, but like this primary school that we went to was haunted as fuck, like genuinely the most rancid vibes on earth. And I think that like really, like that really like flipped a switch in me. Obviously I was already a very spooky child, but this primary school, like so many experiences, like I think everybody in your primary class like had something happen to them. Do you hate any experiences that you can remember in this primary school?
I have no individual experiences, but I remember the toilets were a dodgy place, and there wasn't like any creepy men cutting about them, but I mean like you just go in and it's so dingy and dark, and apparently there's a lot of stories like, I can't remember the specific stories, but like a fire or somebody dying in the toilets. And I'm not going to lie, you never seen the boys' toilets? Well, I assume you never.
No.
Oh, no. Honestly, it looked like you were in Lord of the Rings. That place was just so disgusting.
Well, I can't remember a lot about primary school, but I can remember like these toilets stank of sulfur. Like, oh, proper, like, Dante's Inferno, like, stinking sulfur. No, even, like toilet smell, like, pure sulfuric. But I spoke to my pal Brandon, because he's got a photographic memory, and he was like, it was specifically the boys' toilets that were haunted. Either like, the ghost of a Victorian child in the toilets was the rumour. And then I asked one of your teachers about it in primary school, and they were saying that when there was developments being done on the building, they found a Victorian shoe, like, in the walls. Do you remember this story?
Not specifically, but I remember about the wee lassie in the boys' toilets, because I'd always shite myself when I went for a joke. Like, no pun intended, but that wasn't even a joke, but genuinely, like, closing that cubicle door, see, opening it again, this sort of dim, looking at the urinals, and it wasn't just because they stank of piss, it was literally, there was just a weird atmosphere, you know, the vibes were off.
The vibes were rancid. But this was a genuine thing. They found a Victorian shoe in the wall. And I thought this was like a unique experience to your primary school, but apparently during loads of Victorian developments, they find shoes in walls and shoes up chimneys and stuff, because your primary school told us that this shoe must have belonged to like a chimney sweep or something like that. Mm. And it was like very of the era. And I googled it the day, just to see like why Victorians put shoes in walls, to see if it was a thing. And it was. Apparently, because the shoes in the times were formed to your feet, like they were cobbled and then they were quite rigid leather, so they would eventually form to your feet, kind of like Birkenstocks. because they had such a strong attachment to the wearer, when they were put in these places and hidden in walls or chimneys or on windowsills and stuff, it was basically like the essence of the person that it belonged to would be able to ward off evil spirits. So that's why they were put inside walls and by windows and up chimneys and stuff. It was to stop evil spirits from entering these gateways into the house and then causing mischief in the home.
So if you imagine back then they're trying to ward off evil spirits, think of the development over time and what other evil spirits are cutting about.
Imagine like if this school had rancid vibes in the Victorian times when it was built, like how haunted was it when we went? Like that's all I thought about when I googled that. I was like, right, cool. So that building is obviously just built on like a burial site or something like that, which is true. I did Google that as well. I was what's the history? What is the history of this area, Fife in particular? And it's a Bronze Age burial site, like that whole area.
Jesus.
I'm not going to dox us about like where exactly this primary school is situated, but like I can get receipts. Like there was like a urn and tomb in that found no that far away from this area. So how mental is that? Like our primary school was basically the Stanley Hotel.
See, you always get told that it's haunted and you didn't quite believe it, but if you ever went. Did you ever go to the youth on Fridays or Tuesdays and walk about the school when it was dark and half empty?
Brandon said that on a night that he was at the youth club, so like all the corridors were kept dark apart from the ones like that were used for the youth. And apparently he was walking along the corridor where the toilets were, and there was like glass doors along this corridor before it turned into the toilets. And he said he was like walking along and looked into where the toilet corridor was, and there was somebody standing, like the silhouette of a person, and obviously it was automatic lights, so if there was anybody actually standing there, the lights should have been on. So it was a fucking ghost.
Christ. I bet it was that woman writing her letters.
Fuck. Oh, your primary school head teacher got stalked of a playground helper. Obviously that's really not funny, but like... She would have been lurking.
Aye.
But, like, our head teacher was, like, actually nuts. Like, she looked like Skeletor for He-Man, and she was not a very nice woman. So, like, I'm not saying karma's got its kiss or victim blaming or anything like that, but...
She looked like the Draugr when you finish the first mission in Skyrim. You know, when it comes out the tomb at the end, when you just pass the Riverwood or whatever it's called.
In Bleak Falls Barrow.
Aye, Bleak Falls Barrow, aye. Exactly.
Anyway, now that we've done like our like soapbox moment about how bad our primary school experience was, you want to tell folk a wee bit about yourself?
Of course. So I'm currently an architecture student at Dundee, but I'm making my way being a full-time artist. I'm an abstract painter, and I make large paintings using oil, acrylic, mixture of different work, and yeah, just early in the journey of an artist, you know.
What kind of stuff is your work based on?
Ah, good question. My work is sort of a mixture of expressive sort of mark-making, like Cy Twombly or Basquiat sort of type stuff, and it's also influenced by a lot of history and mythology, which is quite relevant since I'm on the Creepy Wee podcast, so you know,
booked and busy, like picked for a reason.
And yeah, so it's inspired by sort of folk tales, stories and composition, and because I make sort of a mixture of mark making and sort of form work, although it's slightly abstracted, they both influence each other.
Yeah. What kind of paintings have you got that are influenced by mythology?
Right, so I've got... I was in London last month exhibiting a few paintings, and I took my painting Siegfried down, which is influenced by the sort of Germanic tale of Siegfried. I'm sure it's Sigurd in Norse mythology, and Siegfried was a prince of the Netherlands, and he slayed a dragon called Fafnir, and he takes his treasure, and Siegfried is known around those parts as a noble hero, and he was stabbed in the back through the only vulnerable part on his body by people he trusted most. And he was stabbed through the back with a spear. Usually Siegfried has this sort of enchantment over him where he can't be damaged, but after he took a bath in dragon's blood, there was a leaf that fell on him, and so the blood never soaked over one part, and so he had this vulnerable spot, and his trusted friends who were jealous and a lot of love and romance stuff going on, you know how that goes. So he stabbed him through the back with a spear, and it was because Siegfried trusted him. And that relates into my painting through the formwork that I do. I use a lot of movement in my paintings, and overlapping and twisting forms. And so the form that I've did in this one, it's sort of curling in on itself. It's trying to depict anguish and pain and suffering and betrayal. And so it's almost like an abstract image, which is influenced by my feelings at the time. I was going through some stuff, going through some pain, as we all do in life, which sort of related to that. You know, I just got out of a relationship. So I sort of translated that feeling and heart on the canvas through the story of Siegfried, as well as relating it to myself. So the colours in it are quite dark. The composition's very lonely, you could say. The form in the middle is depicting Siegfried, and it's curling in on itself. It's a lot of whites, it's a lot of texture, and reds, which sort of relate to blood. And, you know, like, rather than being confident and standing up, having your chest open, your shoulders wide, curling in on yourself is sort of showing that insecurity or that vulnerability, you know? And me as an artist, I like to sort of... This is what I said when I was in London. I said to all these old folks who were giving me their cards and asking me questions and judging me for being Scottish. I basically sort of danced the line between figurative work and mark making, and I try to keep that sort of ambiguity about it, you know what I mean?
Well, like open for them to interpret rather than...
Yeah, the forms sort of represent a person or an animal or a being, but they're also very expressive. There's a lot of texture, and I'll tape a big canvas to my room wall or any wall, and I'll just stand up and sort of go crazy on it, wide strokes and stuff. Like when you're an artist, using your arm and your body for the movement rather than your wrist, it sort of pays off when you look at the final product, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting that story, Siegfried, it's so similar to Achilles. Like it's, like especially within this podcast, hey, and I don't know, like you probably read a lot of mythology too, but like a lot of these stories, especially for Central Europe, and we'll kind of talk about that today in this episode, they're also interwoven. Even like the story, like a man slaying a dragon, like that sounds so Welsh, and then at the same time it's Norse, but it's got this huge Greek influence. It's just so interesting to see where the, like where the movement of man across Europe and up to the north, like how it's went and how the mythologies traveled and how it's all got interwoven. But it's interesting to see how these stories are, especially how they've moved across art, because especially when you go to more classical museums like the Louvre and stuff like that, they've got a lot of historical paintings and stuff, and they're very, very graphic and very, very romantic, but there's no like a lot of feeling in them, I thought. And then seeing works like yours where there's something, there is a lot of movement and there's a lot of pain, but there's like, it's like feelings that are being expressed. And then obviously there's the names there to let you ken the story, but it's up to you what you make it. Circling back to mythology and how this is relevant to this episode, today we're going to be talking about an Orcadian myth called the Knuckle of E. It's essentially this fusion, a myth for Orkney, which has been influenced by obviously Norse settlers and Celtic folklore. So we'll come back and hear a wee chat about the Knuckle of E.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The creature that we're going to be talking about today is called the Knuckle of E. This devil basically comes from Orkney. If you didn't ken, Orkney is a set of 70 islands about 10 miles off the coast of Caithness, which is at the northern tip of mainland Scotland. These islands have been settled for about 8,500 years, first by the Neolithic people, then by the Picts, and they were later colonised by Norway in 875. So, very, very ancient population, but if you think back to like standard grade high school history, you'll ken that Orkney was, when Orkney was settled by Neolithic people, they are the people that built Scarabray.
Oh, I remember that. I remember
Scarabray. Very, very iconic. I still need to go. Me and Liam are both obsessed with Scarabray.
It's legendary in our high school.
Mr. Walker.
I wasn't about to say the name exactly, am I?
he's a great man. He'll be really proud of me doing a history podcast as badly as I do it.
I'd be shaking in his wee bits, he'd be buzzing.
if you do ever get the chance to go to Orkney and visit Scarabray, you should do so quite fast, because like the Taj Mahal, it's been eroded away by water. And it will only last forever.
Gotta go away. Apologies.
No, that was good. But in 1472, so after like 400 years of rule by Norway, Orkney is eventually absorbed into the Kingdom of Scotland following Denmark's failure to pay the dowry to James III's bride, Margaret of Denmark. James III, son of previous episode topic, James II. And due to this absorption, Orcadian mythology combines really strong elements in Norse and Scottish and Celtic mythology. So it can't be considered, like, this cannot be considered Scottish folklore. Like, this is its own separate mythology. And the impact of the Norse predecessors' arrival on the island is really considerable. Like, every longship that comes into Orkney brings settlers, their own distinct language, customs, traditions, beliefs. And these people told tales of giants and dwarves and trolls and loads of other magical creatures, but the Knuckle of Ea is the perfect example of Norse mythology and Scottish mythology combining to create something that is so unforgettable.
Oh yeah, I've seen it in like all its different sort of illustrated forms, and what I find actually interesting about you talking about Norse mythology is the Knuckle of Ea being a sort of big horse guy with one eye. It sort of parallels a lot of Norse mythology as well in their use of horses. Hell in Norse mythology, so mm-hmm. Hell, is ruled by a deity or being called Hell as well. And they rode a mythical horse that had three legs during times of death and disease. And especially when you're looking at the influence and how sort of they're parallel to each other and intertwined with the influence on Orkney from sort of Norse. That sort of relation of the horse being rode during death and disease is sort of quite literal and literally related to the Knuckle of Ea, you know what I mean?
It's obviously a sea monster, but it's like a centaur, like, or a centaur, with the body of a man growing out the back of a horse. It comes out of the sea, and as Gambo says, it spreads evil and disease wherever it goes. It blights crops, it destroys livestock, and it kills every man it encounters. Even though it's a sea spirit, it can't endure fresh water, and the only way to escape it is to cross a stream or a burn. So this is kind of like Scottish Folklore 101. We've spoke about this in the Tam O'Shanter episode, and we definitely spoke about it in the Scottish Customs episode, but in European folklore, devils and ghouls and witches and stuff can't cross fresh water. Do you have any idea why that is?
Not that I can get my mind to.
It's rooted in religion, but it's kind of like one of the things where you came, which came first, because paganism and Christianity are so intertwined. But basically, it's seen as a barrier that prevents the crossing of unholy beings. Running water has this in the strongest sense, because running water is much cleaner and less likely to harbour diseases, so it was seen as really holy. Therefore, witches and devils and monsters like the Knuckle of Ea wouldn't be able to cross it.
Mm-hmm.
And in my main source for the day, who is Catherine Briggs, who I've stole for you many a time, she contains an antique account by Trail Denison. He was an Orkney farmer and folklorist who recorded the account of a local man named Tammy, who witnessed the Knuckle of Ea and lived to tell the tale. This guy's walking on a clear and starlit night along a strip of land that went through a freshwater lock in the sea. So it's this narrow strip that he's walking through, and he sees something coming towards him. His ears are ringing, his hair standing on end. He kens right away that it's a monster, and he kens that he can't go either side of it. Like, he's got to keep walking, because this is, like, in the 1800s or no. Don't know what, like, the swimming was like back then, but he kens that the only way he could go is for it. So he's creeping forward, and he recognises the thing as the Knuckle of Ea. So as he comes closer, he recognises it as the Knuckle of Ea, the lower part being a great horse, like a Clydesdale, like, huge. And it has flapper-like fins on its legs with a mouth about as wide as a whale's. And apparently the breath that was steaming out of its nostrils, almost like smoke. And it had one eye on the horse's head that was red as fire. Kind of like Eye Sauron, like Lord of the Rings kind of shit. But on its back sat, or rather seemed to grow, the figure of a man who who had nae legs, but he had huge arms that reached down to the ground at the either side of the horse. And apparently its head was about as big as 3 feet in diameter. And this head, as the horse walked along, would bob to the side like it was about to roll off. Apparently the thing that was most horrible of all was the entire monster was skinless. And the whole surface, it only showed red raw flesh, in which blood that was black as tar ran through yellow veins and great white sinews, thick as horses' tethers, twisted and stretched and contracted when the monster moved. Like, I was doing this research the other night and I literally had to turn my light on. Like, the hang with the head creeped me out, but, like, the description of, like, the skinless body, it kind of reminded me, like, when Mary Shelley describes Frankenstein's monster. Because if you've ever read Frankenstein, the original monster, like, didn't he look, like, green and, like, full electricity? It looked like a rotted corpse with, like, sinew and black veins and stuff like that.
Like a flayed man.
Like, it's given Game of Thrones. But for all his shit in his cell, Tammy remembers what he'd heard of the knuckle of his dislike of fresh water. So he's looking at either side of him and he's like, right, well, there's a lock here, so there's got to be fresh running water near it. So he takes the side of the road nearest to the lock, and then the monster gets level with Tammy, and the mouth of the horse yawns like a big bottomless pit, and Tammy finds its breath was as hot as fire on his face and is beginning to burn him. And the big long arms on the man part like stretch out and swipe at him. So he dives into the lock, and some of the water like splashes the horse's legs. It burns it, and it makes like a monstrous roar that sounds a bit as loud as thunder, and it kind of dives and shies out to the other side of the road. So Tammy sees his opportunity and he runs as fast as he can, and the knuckle of these like galloping behind him, and apparently like the sound that's coming out of the horse and out of the man part sounds like the roaring of the sea, and it's really, really loud in Tammy's ears, and he's running and running and running, and he jumps, he sees a burn, so he decides to jump across it, and obviously the knuckle of you can't cross fresh water, so it takes a swipe at him, and it doesn't get him, it gets the bonnet that's on his head, and that's all he manages to get. And I just thought that was really interesting because this whole story reminds me of Tam O'Shanter so much. But it's kind of like when Tam jumps out of the burn and the witch grabs the horse, she only manages to get the tail, but in this one he manages to get the bonnet. So the knuckle of Yigi is like a wild, unearthly yell, a disappointed rage, and Tammy falls senseless at the side of the water, and apparently doesn't move for hours until daylight comes and the knuckle of Yigi's gone.
What I think is interesting as well, because the knuckle of Yigi can't tolerate fresh water, is that it doesn't actually come out when it's raining.
Oh, I didn't think that. Yeah, well,
rain is fresh water, isn't it? So, and also, aye. I was reading about it, and it was talking about, you were talking about the importance of water in religion and where that sort of stemmed from. And we might talk about it later, but the times that the knuckle of Yigi comes out, it's during certain times during seasons.
You're right. In classic folklore fashion, the knuckle of Yigi is confined during the summer months. It's kind of almost like Persephone like leaving the underworld.
Yeah.
And when she leaves the underworld, spring comes because her mother's happy and like summer's back. And then when she goes away again and returns to the underworld, it's autumn and winter, and it's kind of similar to the Calliach, which is a Celtic deity that we spoke about a few episodes ago. She controls winter and the snow and creates mountains and stuff like that, but during the summer months she's asleep. So during spring and summer it's temperate and the weather's lovely, but as soon as Calliach starts to come back, there's storms and there's snow. The knuckle of Yigi, like, it kind of, it seems like it's a way to explain adverse weather. So the knuckle of Yigi is confined during the summer months by a deity called the Mother of the Sea, or the Sea Mother, and it's the only thing that can control it. She's an ancient Orcadian spirit, and she rules the summer, basically, so she quells the turbulent sea waters around the Northern Isles. Shetland Islanders, particularly fishermen, sought her protection to the devil, but in Orkney, swap that out for the knuckle of Yigi, and it's the same thing. But it is, like, a lot of people do consider this to be a way to explain, like, things that the islanders at the time didn't quite understand. And it's kind of similar in, like, every other mythology. Or even, like, on the mainland when it was the Calliach, she was a way to explain how the seasons work. A lot of people do put it into that. But as you can see, it's the perfect fusion of a Celtic water horse, which is a Kelpie, and I promise that that episode is coming. And then that Norse entity that you were talking about, like Hel, like it is that, and it, like obviously, like these places in Scotland are so rife for storytelling that I think it actually like kind of ruins the vibe, like the quality of these stories when you just put it into, oh, these people didn't understand weather, so they put it into like these things. I'm like, no, like like maybe they actually like believed in this shit, because Tammy certainly did.
He's not the only one that has recalled this beast, you know. There's academic journals that describe the Nuclevi as being the most cruel and malignant of all beings that troubled mankind, and that's from the late 19th century, you know. It's very dismissive, you know. It's always interesting to think, like, what is out there when you sort of look beyond your wee window in Dundee, you know?
It must annoy people when I'm like, no, this is 100% real. But, like, I mean, the possibility is just as great. Like, all right, it's folk explaining adverse weather, but the possibility is just as great that that thing does exist at the bottom of the sea, and it comes at winter and it blights people's crops and it brings in storms. But I ken that you had a wee bit of a poem that you wanted to read about this.
Oh, for sure. Creature. So I'm going to read this poem by a guy called D. I'm not sure if that's his full name. Maybe he just goes by one, like McLovin. But I'm going to just read this poem. excuse the accent. As sure as the skin that clings to my ribs and shoulders, as sure as starvation wrings my shrinking stomach, I swear, the hazy glow of the evening sun stung and burnt my pupils into the pits of my eyes. As the roadside lapwings sung a delirious song, the crops around me perished in black, the path beneath me beaten and cracked, the ocean aside me whirled and crashed. I was completely alone. Less so as I ventured ever nearer, so famished and starved was I, my belly let loose a tremendous billow. But the screech and the whinny that followed cursed through my bones into the marrow itself. And as sure as daylight, as sure as my breath, upon the road ahead of me stood no creature of this earth. The beast's breath, caught in the breeze in all its rank putridity, quelled the pangs of hunger that had gripped me. 10,000 corpses, hot, congealed blood, dead, bloated carcasses, unearthed fish guts. I thought it a centaur, a dishevelled rider, but no man's legs straddled aside it. On the mare, an eye that burnt as August sun, thick bulbous tissue, and drapes of loose skin, thick blackened blood pulsing through protruding veins. Between stony white cartilage, a fractured skull exposed its brain. Upon its back, half a man, his right arm outstretched, his left dangling, almost touching the floor. The beast snorting and retching before it let out a roar. A skull, four times that of mine, rocked and toppled atop his spine. In terror, I fled as if wind were at my back. I felt the creature's hot breath at my neck, its teeth bared behind me, grimaced and cracked. The thud of its gallop, nearing and nearing. I prayed to any god that might have been listening. Every last nerve and sinew, twisting and turning, every muscle and fibre, tiring and burning. I slipped on the embankment, toppling towards a narrow, muddy river. Splintering my hip against the rock dazed, I crawled towards the water. Looking over my shoulder at the bloodied stallion of wizened red flesh, he had not left, and I had not yet succumbed, to its steaming wet breath, which pocked my face with globs of thick spit. Charcoal-like teeth gnawing at lacerated lips, its withered right hand arrowed towards me. And you see with your eyes the wound on my chest that tore through my body like it was the skin of the lake. I, with my last ounce of strength, floundered into a stream, as if drowning were sweeter. And Lord, how sweet it was, as the beast let out a holler from the fresh water's touch. And coughing and spluttering, I heaved myself up to the opposite side of the stream. The abomination that left this mark on my body cantered and screamed. It would not cross. It would not cross. I know by your face you're unmoved. You've heard this story before. Please, God, I beg you, I am starving. Upon my knees, I pray, reconsider your choice to send me back whence I came. There's a few lines in that where I maybe missed out a word and just went off the top with it. It's the sort of interpretation of that.
That feels like it might have been based.
It must have been based on the story of Tammy. Aye, for sure.
Aye,
for sure. Because I read about it as well. I wrote some notes on that as well.
I mean, it's always good to hear a wee bit of poetry. Me and Liam are always too scared to read.
you wonder why. You hear me messing up that same verse like 4 times? Jeez.
In post, it'll not be there. I mean, what do you think? Do you think this animal, like, because obviously Tammy's account, and then when you hear that poem, like, it does seem like so frighteningly real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you think that this is like a figment of the people at Orkney's imaginations, or do you think that like this is like a genuine spirit that like does cause plight in the Isles?
Well, you see, like, if it was one sort of only one mention of it, then maybe it could be like, aye, this guy's a bit crazy. Not to like gaslight him, but when there's like multiple recounts of it and it starts to become the culture, obviously it can like pick up and become reality. But I genuinely think, I mean, who knows at this point? Who knows if it's real? I don't think it's fair to say it's not, though, you know? Mm-hmm. I'd feel like...
I would need some cold, hard evidence pointing to say that it's not real.
Aye, exactly. It goes both ways.
Aye. I do love Orkney folklore, though, and I love, like, obviously we've spent in this small, like, section, not a season, but, like, the last 10 episodes of the show, we've had, like, a really strong focus on the islands of Scotland, and obviously there's more to come. We'll hear episodes about Scarabray and Kelpies and Selkies and stuff like that, but it's so interesting that this area of the world in particular, like, these small islands in Scotland, that all their animals are so focused on the sea, like all their gods and deities and stuff are so focused on the sea, because obviously that's what dominated life then. And it still does, like obviously the fishing industry is huge. But like I was saying, like people in Shetland prayed to the devil or like made offers to the sea mother to keep the devil away so that they could have like good harvests and stuff like that. And I suppose it's like the same for, we were talking about in our last episode or a couple of episodes ago, we were talking about Brunies, which are like a house deity, or like they help with in agricultural situations and stuff like that. And it's just so interesting, like the nuances that these different deities and spirits have, like for what's more important, like obviously the land is so fertile in Orkney, but like that's not what takes precedent, it's the sea. Mm-hmm. So like all their deities are so focused. I just think it's so interesting, and art as well is so dominated by the sea in this part of the world. And obviously like we very close to the coast here, but like there's nothing like that here, because
mm-hmm.
in like what we had like coal and then before that there was no and these small fishing villages in Fife specifically, like there's no, like I would love to ken, though, if anybody out there kens like any like kind of similar sea creatures that are, feel like Fife or other places in Scotland, but like this Norse influence is so strong and it just makes the folklore just that much sweeter and better. Like it's just so interesting to me.
Yeah, it's really sort of plays out the significance of water in folklore and mythology, you know, like for the people in Orkney, water was a source of food and, you know, life. The rain and on the crops and the fishing, but it's also like water, it's the unknown, you know, we haven't explored all of it, like you say before, and it's dangerous and it's powerful, and it's like, that's almost represented by the life that water gives, but also the knuckle of V and the death that it brings, you know.
It is metal, though, like it's genuinely one of the, it is without a doubt the scariest monster that I've come across in my research for this podcast.
Oh yeah, for sure. It looks like a creepypasta.
But that's an Knuckle of V, the scariest so far. I'm sure I'll manage to trump it. And I hear your cries, like I will, when Liam comes back, we'll do Kelpies. But Gambo, is there anything you'd want to plug, like your Twitter, your Instagram?
Sure. You can follow me on Instagram at Gambotion, so that's GAMBOCEAN. Same on Twitter, and I've got a website as well, gambotion.com. Feel free to visit it, give it a wee look. Yeah.
buy some NFTs.
Come on then.
maybe somebody out there is like bank like, cool. Can buy an NFT.
Aye, for sure.
Bye. That's the Creepy Wee Podcast. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another guest, my lovely friend Holly. But I just mind and check out Gambo on Instagram and Twitter and that. And you can follow us on Instagram at the Creepy Wee Podcast, Twitter at the Creepy Wee Pod, and then our website is thecreepywepodcast.co.uk, and you can submit personal stories, episode requests, or the rest of it there, and we'll get back to you. Right. Thanks. Bye. Wee.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.